The U.S. Coast Guard has an auxiliary of volunteers who keep recreational boaters like you and me safe. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Our two guests are with the auxiliary, and they'll tell us about the group and what they do. In the studio with me today, Mark Scheffler. Mark, great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for being here.
He is the staff officer for public affairs for the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary Flotilla in Neenah, Wisconsin. Kevin Osgood with us as well. Kevin, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
The division staff officer for public affairs in Green Bay. And you may have benefited and knew about it, that you benefited from the Coast Guard Auxiliary. Maybe you were benefited and didn't know about it as well. That's a possibility, too. You might even be interested in joining this organization. Love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you, and we're going to learn all about what the auxiliary does and how it can help you and me. Well, let's start with the Coast Guard Auxiliary itself. Just what is it, and what are the responsibilities? Kevin, do you want to take that?
Sure. The Coast Guard Auxiliary, kind of their mission is to support the active duty Coast Guard in its roles, and the primary role is boater safety and education, and that part of the outreach. Most of us are boaters ourselves. We're volunteers, but we have the opportunity once we're in to train alongside the Coast Guard, meet the same qualifications, participate in patrols on the water, and helping educate the boaters in our own neighborhoods where we live. So it's not only a lot of fun, but it expands friendships and safety. And that's one of the reasons I got involved was I actually work in a profession where we report a lot of the things that happen to people when they're on the water. I got tired of being on just that side of it and thought, you know, I want to step up and do my part to try and prevent some of these things from happening.
Well, let's turn to Mark for just a second. Now, you are with the flotilla. What does this unit do? How is it different from the other units?
So a flotilla is the basic organizational structure of the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary. So we have local flotillas, and we have quite a number actually throughout Wisconsin. And at the flotilla level is where most of the operations happen. So I'm a part of the Neenah Menasha Flotilla. We keep two vessels on the Fox River in the Whiting Boathouse right on Lake Winnebago. So that's our patrol area. Kevin works for a flotilla, volunteers for a flotilla, rather, up on the Bay of Green Bay.
And obviously those are waters that can create problems sometimes when the wind comes up and the storms come. Winnebago is one of those lakes that can really get some pretty high waves.
It can, yeah. It's one of these choppy lakes in Wisconsin.
So those two locations, are there other locations around there? I expect there might be one up near Superior or in that area.
There is. There's one on the north coast up there, at least one. There's several around the state. How many, I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, we made a list of about a dozen or so. So we've got Kenosha. We have one right here in Madison. We have one out on Prairie du Chien, Neenah Menasha, Green Bay, Sheboygan, Milwaukee, and then up the lake shore to Sturgeon Bay as well.
Paula in Milwaukee has something for us. Let's go to her. Paula, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Yeah. So can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. So my dad, who would be 97 now if he were alive, so this was many years ago, was part of that auxiliary. And his best story was how he had he and his friend in their Piper Cub from 1945 had saved a couple of kids out on a raft. I'm not sure if it was Green Bay or Lake Michigan. But anyway, it was quite an experience for him, and he enjoyed telling us. And we still tell that story. I think I have an old newspaper article about it.
So he flew right out there and somehow got them out of the...
They could not find these kids out on the raft, so they were very persistent and found them and then contacted the Coast Guard, who then obviously went out with a boat and got them.
Oh, that's...
And I was...
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was up in that Piper Cub a couple times, and when I saw the date, 1945 or whatever it was from,
Well, that's a great story, Paula. Thanks so much for calling. Kevin, I imagine you get a few of those stories.
It's a lot of great stories. And that story is a perfect opportunity to also mention, when you think Coast Guard auxiliary, we think boats. But there's also auxiliary air. So if you're a pilot and you are interested in participating in something like that, that still happens, where auxiliarists will take to the air, go out and look for people who are in trouble, whose call or mayday help might have gone out, and then spot those people so the boats can go get them. And we recently had the Experimental Aircraft Association show in Oshkosh.
Yeah.
And auxiliarists from all around Lake Michigan. And I was talking to a Coast Guard Command Master Chief last night in Sturgeon Bay, and he said there were over 1,000 auxiliarists in flotillas just around Lake Michigan. And they were the stories from the people that came together at Oshkosh were just incredible, because I worked on a boat with four people. None of us had ever met each other before, but we all trained to the same standards and we all knew what we were doing out there, and it was a tremendous amount of fun, and we actually had to go on a call that turned out good while we were out there. But
oh, well, how is this all funded? How's the auxiliary funded? It's volunteer. You guys are volunteers. Out of your own pockets to some extent.
To a large extent, actually, yeah. So there's different levels of the Coast Guard, of course. So the active duty Coast Guard is funded by tax dollars primarily. For the auxiliary, it's primarily volunteers. So in a lot of flotillas, members are actually contributing the use of their own vessels, either surface vessels, boats on the water, or air vessels through the air side of it as well. We do donations. We do fundraisers like a lot of nonprofits would. But the Coast Guard Auxiliary is a nonprofit organization.
Let's talk a little bit about the training for something like this. What kind of background do you need to join an organization like this?
Yeah, so I was just going to. All you need is interest,
right?
If you have the interest, we can take care of the rest.
Yeah. So in each flotilla, there's a flotilla staff officer structure, and one of those staff officers is member training. So we have a lot of people that come into the auxiliary who have never been on a boat before. They want to get out on the water a little bit more, so we train them to either be boat crew. But then there are also onshore missions as well that we can be trained for. For example, I'm trained as a telecommunications officer. Kevin is training as a regular boat crew. So these organizations then have the structure where we can provide training really to anyone who has an interest. And that's the really neat part of it.
Yeah, it sounds fascinating. So the background, it doesn't really matter. What's involved in joining the organization?
It's simply raising your hand and getting in touch, sending an email. There will be follow-up. And if you go to Google and type in U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary and your community, then the closest ones will show up. And if you drop them an email, you'll get someone reaching out to you to tell you when their next activity is that you may want to go take a look at. But there's a lot of different ways to get involved. There's a lot of people in my flotilla that they don't want to be on the water, but they're fantastic at the training with the communications and former accountants that take care of the money from our dues. But all that needs to happen for the organization to be able to accomplish its mission. So everyone has a skill they can bring in.
And we'll talk some more about that. And I want to also talk a bit about safety, because you guys, do you do training sessions, safety training sessions for folks as well, Mark?
We do, yeah. So one of our primary missions, and most flotillas have between 4 and 6 primary missions, and one of those missions is public education. So typically in the winter months when the ice is on the water and no one's out boating, that's when we would have a lot of our public outreach or public education. So we do boater safety classes. Through the state of Wisconsin, you can also take those online. Anyone ages, I think, 14 and up in the state of Wisconsin has to have passed a boater safety course in order to operate a motorized vehicle on the water. So you can either take it online, but we think it's a lot more effective and, frankly, a lot more fun to take it in person with the Coast Guard Auxiliary staff. So we do that throughout flotilla areas right around Wisconsin.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot more fun to me, to be able to actually go out and hands on the boat and hands on, you know.
And we've had a lot of people that do it as a family. I've come across a lot of people that do father, son, mom, daughters. They'll do it as a family, take that boating safety class together so everyone on the boat knows what to do when the season starts.
Talking today with a couple of guests here, Mark Scheffler, a flotilla staff officer for public affairs for the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary Flotilla in Neenah. Kevin Osgood is the division staff officer for public affairs in the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary in Green Bay. We're talking with them today about the auxiliary and the flotilla itself, and also we're going to be talking a bit about boater safety as well with them, so I hope you'll join in. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. We are going to take a quick look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the IdeasNet, and then we'll be back with our guests. Again, the number 1-800-642-1234. Stay with us. We'll be back with our guests right after this look at the news. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary Flotilla. I'm Larry Mueller. My guests, Mark Scheffler and Kevin Osgood. Mark is the Flotilla Staff Officer for Public Affairs for the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary Flotilla in Neenah. Kevin Osgood is a Flotilla Staff Officer for Public Affairs for the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary in Green Bay. It's great to have both of them with us. To talk about what the auxiliary flotilla does and also to talk about a lot of what they do has to do with safety and saving people, and we'll certainly be talking about that as well. You may have an experience to share or a question to ask, and I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, and you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Mark Scheffler, you had a good story to tell, I think, about how you happened to get involved in all this.
Yeah, 4th of July evening in 2013, I was out in a sailboat, and just after the fireworks got done, I turned on my engine and was about to motor back across Lake Winnebago from Neenah, Menasheside, back over to High Cliff State Park. And the belt that takes in the coolant water on my boat shredded into a million pieces. Can't run a sailboat engine without that. So we didn't have an engine, and so I raised the mainsail to try to sail back, but it was dark out, couldn't get the boat in the right direction. Hoisting the mainsail up, the mainsail ripped.
Oh.
So now we didn't have an engine, didn't have a mainsail, and I called 911. Had a VHF radio right in the boat, but I wasn't really that well trained in how to use it.
Yeah.
The Winnebago County Sheriff's Department patched me through to the U.S. Coast Guard and the Coast Guard Auxiliary, which just happened to be on the lake that night. So a trip that was supposed to be back at about 10:30. Actually, it was one of the most wonderful nights of my life, actually, just full of adventure. The Coast Guard hauled us in at about 3:30 in the morning, and then they had to do a safety inspection, make sure I had all my equipment and the horn and the whistle and all that and the flotation devices. But that's what got me into the Coast Guard Auxiliary. I mean, that experience of having a friendly, helping hand out on the water that night. And I didn't even know that there was a Coast Guard Auxiliary right on Lake Winnebago until that night.
And that got you interested and got you going.
That's a
great story. And we'll get to Jim and Duluth here in a second. But Kevin, how'd you get involved?
Well, I have some experiences back. I used to be in the Navy in a different lifetime, a long time ago. And a lot of those situations did not turn out well. And in my current career, which is in the news business and television, we're often there after the fact.
Yeah.
And you know, we're always going to the bad news, and that just frankly stinks. And I got tired of it. It's all about education. You know, Mark learned incredible lessons that night, and if we can just get that in front of people ahead of time, then maybe we'll cover less of these things, less of these tragedies on the water, fewer of them. And that's what motivated me, that I can I can walk the journalistic line for my job on one side and then trying to educate people on the other.
Great stories. Jim in Duluth, Minnesota. Let's go to you now. Hi, Jim.
How are you doing today?
Yep.
I happen to be the communications officer for our Duluth flotilla, which we have and is really active up here. And we could go all as far as up to Grand Marais and the whole, you know, that whole area to cover Duluth Superior. And there's also another flotilla over in Bayfield that we know of.
So you get out there pretty often?
For the communications, I do a lot of that on shore, but I also do vessel examinations in the springtime. And I do quite a bit of those.
Well, thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. It's nice to hear from some other guys who are, and I'm sure women as well, that are involved in this.
That's right. Yeah, and I should mention, too, that Jim's experience up in Duluth kind of exemplifies how spread out we are across the Great Lakes as well. So obviously that's up on Lake Superior. And I should mention that with the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary, membership is open to any U.S. citizen, age 17 and up, and that's pretty unique as well. It's kind of a unique branch of the military where you can actually choose where you're going to serve. You get to choose the mission area that you want to work in, and then because it's a volunteer organization, you get to choose, like Jim, how much or how little he does.
Really good, cool. Thanks, Jim, for calling. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Let's talk a little bit about the safety side of things. How many people, Kevin, you were telling me during the news break about the number of accidents or deaths and so forth that occur on the waters.
I was putting together a presentation to speak to a paddling organization, and unfortunately we didn't get the chance to do that because the meeting was on April 15th and 3 feet of snow fell. Putting together those numbers, and the last numbers that I could get confirmed for an entire year in Wisconsin was 2016, and that was 25 boating deaths that year in 2016, just two summers ago. And only one of those people who died had a life jacket on. Only one. And there's another statistic that I came across that day, and it's roughly almost 90% of people who are involved in incidents on the water have never taken a boating safety class. So they haven't had that basic bit of understanding and knowledge of the rules of the road and what to do in an emergency and how to use the radio and what equipment you need to have on the boat. You have to plan for the what ifs because that's what's going to get you.
And I've mentioned a couple times on the show over the years, I think that over the last few years, just a few years ago, I lost one of my really good friends, close musky fishing buddies, who fell out of his boat and didn't have his flotation. You know, he wasn't wearing his jacket, and a really good swimmer, but it was in the fall of the year, and his buddy threw him a seat cushion, but he was a few feet short. And by the time the boat got around, Jerry was gone. And so it's something, and you sometimes you wonder, well, why aren't people wearing it? Well, some people say they're uncomfortable. Talk a little bit about that.
Oh, I had a conversation with someone at a boat show in Green Bay where we had a booth set up trying to educate people as they were browsing boats before the season started. And a young lady came up who's a paddleboarder, which is a rapidly growing sport.
Yeah.
And she wanted to know if life jackets were mandatory in the state of Wisconsin if you're paddleboarding. Well, the answer is yes. And her answer was, but they get in the way of my tan lines.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sorry, but yeah, you should wear one. It's the law to wear one, and your tan lines aren't important if you don't survive getting hit by someone or having a problem out on the water.
Yeah. What are the devices that you most often, are there some that you recommend that you like that allow for movement and so forth?
Yeah, one of the really nice designs right now, in fact, I'm heading over to a boating store on the way out of town today. For my sailboat, for my son and I, we sail a lot, and so I've invested in a couple of kind of advanced design life vests, and they're not that expensive. It's it's a very thin, small life vest that clips onto the front, and it has a CO2 cartridge in it. And with the CO2 cartridge, most of them you just yank on a little line. And this is actually really fun when we do a boater safety class. We'll ask one of the kids, you know, usually it's a teenage girl or teenage boy who's in the class, to come up in front. We'll put this this advanced life vest on them. We'll say, hang on, and we pull on the strap, and then it immediately inflates. And it's really pretty impressive to see. But they're so light, they're so easy to use. Some of them even have a little salt capsule in them, so that when you go into the water, they automatically inflate immediately. They have the headrest on the backside, and then when they inflate, because you get them in camouflage as well, so you can't even really see them. But then when they inflate, the inflation part of it is yellow, so immediately that's going to attract attention in the water, help us find people when they're missing in the water.
And for the paddleboarders who don't want to mess up their tan lines, they have very similar personal flotation devices now that basically look like a fanny pack around your waist. And that triggers the exact same way with a CO2 cartridge. Now, the difference is you have to physically put your head through it, but at least it's something, so you have some sort of flotation.
What's the cost of something like that?
Well, for
roughly.
Yeah, I was messing, probably about $90 to $100.
That's pretty cheap when you come to think about
Mm-hmm. When you think about the price of a life, it's absolutely important and absolutely very inexpensive. And one thing to be aware of, too, is I've been in some stores and seen sales on what appear to be life jackets. And you pick them up, especially for children, they'll look like a dinosaur or superhero or something. But some of them are not Coast Guard approved. So they're not going to work. They're designed to, you know, be used when you're trying to teach a small child how to swim, and you're right there holding on to them, and for that little extra bit of comfort for you as a parent, they are not designed to keep them afloat and breathing should they be left alone in the water.
Well, let's take another call. Carolyn in Oshkosh, we'll give you a chance. Thanks, Carolyn, for calling.
Hi, Larry. My mom and dad fish in Canada, and my dad accidentally knocked my mom off the boat, and she went under several times and said that she knows what it feels like to drown, because my dad couldn't get her back in the boat. But let's just say after that she wore a life jacket. It was the comfort thing before that. Oh, it's so uncomfortable. But after nearly drowning, she wore a life jacket after that.
Yeah, a good story to tell.
It changes your perspective on things. And it'd be fantastic to share her story on one of the Coast Guard Auxiliary Facebook pages or something in the Nina Menasha Oshkosh area. That's a story that our instructors can use when we're at a show talking to people or when we're doing a boating safety class. That's lucky for her.
Yeah, thank you so much. And for calling, Carolyn. Cheryl in Conover has something relating, I believe, to what you were just talking about a minute or two ago, Kevin and Mark.
Yes.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Two things real quick. These parents who have those infants on those boats without life jackets should be flogged. That's number one. I raised two sons who water ski. We've been around the water. Life jackets save lives. End of conversation. We told our boys that the DNR told us they had to wear them till they were 14. And then if they were in the boat alone, they had to wear them all the time until they were 99.
Perfect.
And I can tell you another thing. Many, many years ago when I was a young woman and I sailed, on that Lake Michigan, I had a vessel life jacket that we wore when we sailed. And I can tell you, when the 13-footers came up on Lake Michigan and I was thrown into Lake Michigan on the Michigan side, it was that life jacket, my whistle, and that extension line that saved my life to have two children and be married and be a grandmother. And so all I'm going to say is when I see parents on boats, and I live in the North Woods where there's a lot of lakes without kids in life jackets, I've been known to be obnoxious. And I tell them flat out, you can't hold that baby if you get knocked off that boat.
Yeah.
The only way that baby's going to stay floating is if that baby has a jacket on. And I don't care how uncomfortable it is. Of beans.
There you go. Well, what about for infants? Another great story there, by the way.
There are personal flotation devices for infants as well. You may have to look a little harder for them and go to the regular boating supply store instead of the big box store to find them, but they do exist, and they are required. In Wisconsin, it's 12 and under is the law to have a life jacket on the entire time they're on that boat, and that includes infants. You can't just hold them. And that was a conversation we had with a family on a boat during the EAA patrol we were on. We were stopped and asked, and again, as auxiliary, there's no law enforcement power.
Right.
We don't have law enforcement power, but we can tell people what the law is, and we told them what the law was, and they made the smart decision, and they turned around and went back because of the amount of they saw the sheriff's boat on the other side of the bay and knew, well, maybe we should probably not do this. Hopefully they thought, let's not risk our child's life. Because unless I told somebody a couple months ago during the Safe Boating campaign, unless you have gills, wear a life jacket.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you, Cheryl, for calling. Maria in Washington Island, your turn.
Hi, Larry. This is a wonderful show, and I think I want to see if Cheryl's running for governor. I'm quite interested in her stance. Anyway, what I was calling about is we follow, you know, just through the news, the Mackinac race. And unfortunately, there was the one loss of life that I'm aware of, in my understanding, that he had a style of flotation that when he hit the water, that it was supposed to inflate, but this did not. And I was wondering if your guest has any comment on that. And if these do have a cartridge, how could you ever test it until you're in that situation?
Yeah, good questions.
Yeah, good question. So what I discovered actually is that with the newer design of the life vest, they come in two different varieties. One is a manual inflation, and then one is an automatic inflation. And with the manual inflation, if you go overboard but you are not conscious, you hit your head on the way down, for example, you still have to manually pull on that cord, and it'll inflate very rapidly, but if you're not conscious, you can't do that. So if you have a heart attack, if it's an injury situation and you end up in the water, unfortunately, that's not going to automatically inflate. The ones that are a little bit more expensive have the salt capsule in them. When you hit the water there, the salt capsule dissolves, and that triggers the CO2 canister to inflate. As far as testing the CO2 canister, she's exactly right. There is no way to test it except to periodically spend the $35 or $30 or so that it takes just to replace the cartridge and test it. And we do recommend that you do test those and actually replace the ones with the cartridge, that salt capsule, replace those every 3 years.
About every 3 years, another $30 or so. Mm-hmm. That's still only $10 a year.
Yeah.
If you figure it out that way, that's not a whole lot of money just to make sure that you're safe. In the case of the person who died, who knows, maybe that person was not able to inflate. On those cartridges that are supposed to inflate when they hit the water, if they don't, there's not a pull device or anything that you can...
I think there is a backup.
There is?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, but if you get a glump of water in your, you swallow a bunch of water and get disoriented or whatever.
Right, and we're speculating. I have no idea. Any of the specifics on what happened in that incident, but it could have been as simple as it not being one of those that automatically inflate in the water.
And the caller from Conover, too, raises a really good point, too. She mentioned about having a whistle. A lot of flotation devices now will have a whistle that's in a little pocket, or you can just tie it on. That's a really important thing to do, especially if you're out at night as well. If you have the flotation device on and you're floating in the water for hours and hours on end, it's going to be really difficult for you to communicate. If you have that whistle, that's exactly what the Coast Guard and other search and rescue personnel will be both looking for and listening for.
Let's talk a bit more about membership and joining here, the organization itself. It's kind of nice, I think, in that, I mean, it's a volunteer group, so you can kind of pick your time and...
pick your level of involvement, how much time you have. A good number of the members are retired. And like Mark was saying, we come from all walks of life. Some of us are retired, some of us are not. Some are former military, some are not. Some have never been on the water, some have lived their life on the water. But it's this shared experience and desire to get out there and do something positive that brings everybody together. Across the country, it's 26,000 men and women, 1,800 boats, 160 aircraft, all in the auxiliary. And once these are, you're a member of the auxiliary and you begin the training process and you're brought into the loop on things, when the hurricane hits South Texas or Florida or something, depending on your level of training, you can help. You can be a part of that and your availability. So not only can you be involved in making a difference in your own community, you can travel across the country and help in another community and help the Coast Guard there accomplish its mission.
And where do you go to look further into this or even maybe sign up?
It's so easy, actually. You can just go to Google or any your favorite search engine and just put in Coast Guard Auxiliary. You'll find the homepage for the Coast Guard Auxiliary, and then on that homepage, you'll be able to find a flotilla that's local to you.
And, just a note here from Noah in New Glarus. He called in to say that American Family Children's Hospital in Madison has a store that sells safety supplies at cost.
Perfect.
And he got infant life preservers there. And I'm sure if it's at the American Family Children's Hospital in Madison, they're going to have approved life preservers. And there may be other places that have that as well.
It just takes a little bit of extra effort. Thanks to Noah for calling in and letting us know that so we can get the word out. But it is a little more difficult to find those infant ones. So you might have to use Google or contact your local Coast Guard Auxiliary flotilla. I guarantee you someone in that flotilla knows where you can get these.
What's your you got a great rescue story for us, Kevin, here as we conclude?
I got a great rescue story, and it comes from the waters of Lake Winnebago just a couple Fridays ago. And actually, Mark was working as the TCO, the communications officer. I happened to be in training on one of the boats. It was the end of our day. We're coming home, and the sheriff's department gets a call of a couple overdue kayakers. The Sector Lake Michigan approves us helping the sheriff's office. We take off. The Winnebago sheriff's boat they already were on the way, and they got there a little ahead of time. They found the kayakers. They were great. But the beauty of this story is they brought them aboard the boat. They all got home safely. The beauty of it is they had filed a float plan. Something else to do, whether you're a paddler, a sailor, or a power boater, is let someone know when you're going out, when you expect to be back, and if you're overdue, to call for help. And that's what happened here. They had let people know that they were going to be out for a certain amount of time, and once they were overdue, those people called for help. And it doesn't have to be even you can do it if you're a techie and you got a smartphone. You can download the Coast Guard app, and you can, with that, there's all sorts of information on boating rules, regulations, but you can also file a float plan electronically through the app.
And
another nice little thing on the app is it has an emergency button that uses your phone's GPS. So if you have an ability to keep the phones dry on the boat, you can touch that emergency button in an emergency, and the Coast Guard will know where you are.
Wow. Really good information. And it's fun to learn about the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary Flotilla. And Mark and Kevin, thank you both so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having us.
Appreciate it very much. Mark Scheffler, Flotilla Staff Officer for Public Affairs for the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary Flotilla in Neenah. Kevin Osgood, Flotilla Staff Officer for Public Affairs for the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary in Green Bay. They do a great job, and they seem to have a lot of fun doing it, too. It's a lot of fun for them, maybe fun for you as well. So you might want to go online and take a look at learn more about the Coast Guard Auxiliary Flotilla and how you could get involved in it. Well, tomorrow at this time, our home improvement specialist John Freiberger joins us to talk about rain guards and answer your questions. Stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network.